Hello and welcome back to the podcast. This is the Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD podcast. This is episode number 182. I am your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. If you're looking for strategies to live a naturally healthy life, you are in the right place. Today, I'm going to do a question and answer session. We're going to talk about what's up with the fasting blood sugars. We're going to talk about what does it mean when you have hypoglycemia. We're going to talk about sweeteners and how many carbs to eat per day. And then we're going to talk a little bit about when to count calories and how that can be a strategy that you use to help you in your journey. Before we get started, I have a couple things I want to mention. One is if you are on medications for your type 2 diabetes, please be careful implementing the changes that I recommend during these podcast episodes. You have been medicated because the way you have been living your life, the way you've been eating, the way you've been exercising, the things you've been doing has created the need for medications. So if you change the things you've been doing, the medications are going to need to change. Okay. You can get pretty sick if you're continuing to medicate and not watching your sugars very closely and not having a good close relationship with your provider that's writing the prescription for those medications. So you need to give them a call, let them know what you're doing, figure out how they want you to share your blood sugar readings with them. Do they want you to call their nurse? Do they want you to fax them in? Do they want you to email them in? What do they want you to do? They likely have some way they want you to do this, but let them know and get clear on how they want you to contact them when your sugars are getting low so that you can figure out when to start coming off your meds. Okay. Be very careful if you are medicated and starting to make these lifestyle modifications, these dietary modifications. I also want to point out before we get started, if you have any questions about anything, please email me, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. I'm happy to answer any questions. And lastly, follow me on the social media. If I only do Instagram and Facebook, and then of course I do YouTube. So Delaine MD on all of those platforms, you can find me. If you're following on YouTube, you will get access to the podcasts earlier. So subscribe on YouTube. You can also post questions there. I will answer them. Also on Facebook, there is a Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD Facebook group. So ask to join that and get in there. There's lots of good conversation that goes on in there. I can answer questions for you in there. It's just a different way to contact me if you have any questions. Okay. Before we get started, I promise we're going to get the question and answers, but somebody sent me the most wonderful email and I want to share it with you. So this is John's story. He sent me an email. It says, in 2004, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I was devastated at only 50 years old. I was overweight at 6'2" and 260 pounds. I'd watched my dad die at age 49 from the same thing. So overall, I was pretty scared because my A1C was 7.4. I had a great doctor at the time explaining how I could go down one of two different roads. One was reading a book called Sugar Busters and taking action, and the other one was medical pills and sooner than later, insulin. I chose the book. Long story short, I started a new lifestyle. For me, fitness and diet has changed my life in about every aspect. Now at 205 pounds, it's been almost 20 years without any medications. My A1C average is around 5.6 to 6.1 at the highest, and I check it every year. I found your podcast and I love it. I'm now 63 and still going strong. I love your insights and your wonderful information. So thank you. And yes, hear this, guys. Yes, you can definitely defeat this disease with some hard work and lifestyle skills. So I think that's really important to hear. I wasn't podcasting in 2004. I wasn't sharing this message in 2004. It is possible to change this disease. It is possible to manage it, to undo it, to fix it by just living your life differently. The way that you are living is what created this disease. I know this story gives a great example of like, but no, it runs in the family. My dad had it too. No, the way that we eat, I always say that my love for apple pie, that's what runs in my family. I learned that from my family. That's where we learn how to eat. So it makes sense if we learn to eat the way our parents ate and the way that our parents ate gave them diabetes, the way that we eat, if we're eating like them, is also going to give us diabetes. It is not genetically predispositioned. This is a disease of the foods that we eat. When you change the way you eat, you will change your health. And that's what this is about. So let's go into the questions. I've had a number of questions either within the Facebook group or emailed to me. So I want to answer some of those because I think clearly if one person has it, probably others have it. And it's just really good information as we're working through the new year and maybe making lifestyle changes so that we can meet our New Year's resolutions or our goals or whatever it might be. You are probably running up to some of these questions. So I want to answer them. So the first one is, what is up with my fasting sugars? I have done a podcast on this. I think it was podcast episode number 148, where I talked about fasting sugars. And I may be wrong on that. So I apologize, but you can find that podcast. So I'll put it in the show notes actually, and see if we can get it linked up there. So what is up with the fasting blood sugar? So recognize your fasting blood sugar is going to be your highest blood sugar of the day, and it is going to be the last blood sugar to normalize. And this is normal. Nothing has gone wrong. You are not broken. You're not doing anything wrong. You're not getting up in the middle of the night and eating. None of these things are happening. Your fasting blood sugar is an element of how insulin resistant you are. It's an element of how sick you are with type 2 diabetes. That's all it is. So if, say, you've been eating well, low carb, you know, you've been keeping your carbs low, you've been doing all the things you need to do for the last 2 weeks, but your fasting blood sugar is still at 130 in the morning or 120 in the morning. And you know that a normal fasting blood sugar needs to be somewhere between 85 and 95. That's probably what you're going to see whenever your insulin resistance normalizes. So you know this. So of course, your brain wants to go, it's not working, because you're not seeing that after 2 weeks of living differently. Understand that when you start feeding yourself less carbs, you will start to see lower blood sugars after those meals because you're feeding yourself less carbs. You are controlling that with what you are doing, your action in the moment. Those fasting blood sugars are not about your action in the moment. Your fasting blood sugars are an element of how insulin resistant you are. That does not fix in a 24-hour period. That does not fix in a day. That is going to take you many days of feeding yourself a low amount of carbohydrates in order to burn off. I like to look at it as burning off that insulin resistance, right? So insulin resistance is that your cells have been exposed to too much insulin and they don't function correctly in the presence of insulin, okay? How this happens is you've had too much, a high concentration over a prolonged period of time. Those are the two things that have to happen to create that insulin resistance, okay? High amounts, high concentration of insulin over a prolonged period of time. Now, if you're eating less carbs and you're practicing intermittent fasting, you're lowering that concentration and you're decreasing the exposure that your cells have to insulin. And that's great and grand, but doing it for one 24-hour period does not allow the cells to heal. Like, it's just not enough time. Your cells aren't going to go back to functioning normally yet. So I like to think of it kind of like a sunburn. If you go and spend 8 hours on the beach in the sun and you get sunburned, and then you come in for an hour, you're like, but I went out of the sun. You and I both know your skin is not healed well enough at that point to re-enter into the sun. It takes longer to heal the skin. Same thing with your cells. Just because you're doing it for 2 weeks doesn't mean that your cells are going to heal up. It just takes longer to heal the cells up. Nothing's gone wrong. Keep at it over time. You will see that fasting sugar come down. Okay. So understand that's why your fasting blood sugar is the last to come down. When I talk about being an example or being like an indicator of how sick you are with type 2 diabetes or how insulin resistant you are, that fasting blood sugar is not driven by the food that you eat. Every morning, every human being has a surge of cortisol that gets released into their system. This is to raise our body temperature. This is to help liberate glucose into our blood so that we can get up and be human beings. Because right, 10,000 years ago, there wasn't a fridge waiting with your breakfast. There wasn't a cupboard with your cereal waiting for you. There was no food guaranteed when you woke up as a human being 10,000 years ago. So our body had to have a way of releasing glucose to fuel our cells so that we could get up and be human beings, walk around, do the things we needed to do, go hunt and gather food, those sorts of things, okay? this cortisol release is that process. I call it the original refrigerator, right? It is the process that allows our body to release glucose so that we can get up and be human beings. That is not the only function of cortisol. So cortisol serves a number of functions in the human body. One of them is this morning effect, but the other one is a stress response. It is a stress response hormone, meaning when you get stressed, your body is going to produce this hormone cortisol. Why? Because 10,000 years ago, a stressor meant that something was probably trying to kill you and you needed to fuel your cells to fight or flight, to either fight off the concerning life-threatening situation or to flight, to run from the life-threatening situation. You needed to release some cellular energy, glucose, in order to do that. Okay. This is 10,000 years ago. So recognize stressors that we have happen today are not life-threatening usually. They're bills that are unexpected or more than we expected. They're, you know, stressors, you know, at work, a new assignment given to us that we weren't expecting that significantly adds to our workload. An argument with a loved one. These are the stressors that we experience as human beings now. So that's the psychological stressors. Then also understand physiologic stressors also will cause a cortisol release. What's a physiologic stressor? Going out and exercising. If you go out and exercise, this happened to me the other day. I went and did a hard run in the morning. I did speed work in the morning. So I was working, I was kicking it. And I came home. And I checked my blood sugar, and this was still a fasting because I hadn't eaten, and my blood sugar was 122. That is not technically a normal, quote unquote, fasting blood sugar, but going and checking my blood sugar after a run is also not technically a fasting blood sugar. The sugar that you want to catch is that first sugar in the morning before you've had any chance to release more cortisol because of your exercise, right? The next day, I checked my blood sugar right after I got out of bed, 75. Okay, that I didn't eat anything. It's not like I ate anything before I went and ran or after I ran. That 122 the day after I ran was because I'd exercised. That's all it was. Okay, so do understand that there are physiologic stressors that will cause your body to produce glucose, this cortisol leading the glucose response. The other of these physiologic stressors can be illnesses. You got COVID, you got a urinary tract infection, you've got pneumonia. Those acute illnesses will release more cortisol into your system, as will your chronic disease states will release insulin into your system. So what that means is when you wake up in the morning, you're going to get a cortisol release, but that cortisol release is going to be exaggerated because of your chronic disease state of type 2 diabetes. So you're getting kind of a double whammy there, okay? So you're going to have the cortisol release that releases glucose into your system because you're waking, but that cortisol release is going to be exaggerated due to the fact that you're chronically ill with type 2 diabetes and hypertension and dyslipidemia and all of these things. Okay. In addition to that, so you're getting a higher cortisol release, which will release more sugar into your system. So you're already starting out higher. But in addition to that, your cells are still insulin resistant, which means your cells don't bring that glucose in effectively. And that number stays high longer. So you're having an exaggerated release of cortisol, which gives you an exaggerated glucose response. And then your cells are slow at bringing that down. So you're going to have that lingering around for longer. Okay. This is why your fasting blood sugar, one, it tells you the most about how insulin resistant you are. How is your diabetes going? It tells you the most about that. But it will always be the last one to come down and be normal. And it will always be your highest blood sugar of the day. Nothing's gone wrong. This is exactly how it's supposed to work. Over time, giving yourself less exposure, giving your cells less exposure to insulin, allowing them to heal up is the right answer for normalizing those blood sugars. So if you have any questions about that, please let me know. I have done a podcast again. I will put it in the show notes. So the next question that I had recently was about what does it mean when I have hypoglycemia? And this kind of feeds off of that, you know, question about the cortisol or the fasting sugar and the cortisol and the insulin resistance, right? Because this is what hypoglycemia is. I had hypoglycemia and I thought, oh, I'm so far from being diabetic. Look at me with my low blood sugars. And I was so that like I couldn't have been farther from the truth. Okay. So when you have hypoglycemic episodes, and these are usually what we call rebound hypoglycemia or responsive or reactive hypoglycemia. Normally they occur after you have eaten a large load of carbohydrates. Okay. So this happened to me in college when I would eat Pop-Tarts and I would get sweaty. And I knew, like, I was a biology major, for God's sake. I was a science major. I ended up with a bachelor's in nursing. I knew enough science to know that the feeling that I was getting, the sweaty, jittery, irritability feeling, was the feeling that's associated with hypoglycemia, with low blood sugars. I knew that's what it was, but it didn't make sense to me because did I mention Pop-Tarts? Like clearly I'd had plenty of sugar in the form of a Pop-Tart. So what was going on here? When you are insulin resistant, when your cells are insulin resistant, there is a an unpredictable response to insulin. It's not that there's absolutely no response to insulin. It's that it's unpredictable. So if you give yourself a surge of glucose, of carbohydrates, and then your body, your pancreas responds to that by surging out a bunch of insulin to bring that carbohydrate, that glucose inside your cell and burn it off as fuel, but your cells are insulin resistant, so that initial surge of insulin does not bring the sugar inside, because the glucose then remains elevated because it didn't come inside the cell, your pancreas continues to see that the blood sugar is elevated and it continues to spit out more insulin. Okay. And if that more insulin doesn't bring the sugar inside the cell and burn it off, then your pancreas continues to see the high blood sugar and spits out more insulin. So suddenly you have this ratcheting up of more and more and more and more and more insulin until your cell finally gets the message. It's almost like it yells loudly enough. It overcomes a threshold is really what it is. It overcomes the insulin resistance threshold to open the cells up and bring the glucose inside and allow your cells to burn that off. So when that happens, you suddenly have all of this glucose in your, or oh, I'm sorry, all of this insulin in your system trying to talk your glucose down, right? Bringing it into the cell. And now your cells are like, fine, I'll open up. I'll do what you asked. And they open up and they bring all that glucose in and they stay open because there's all this insulin floating around, right? So suddenly your blood sugar goes from being high to very low, very quickly. And that's hypoglycemia. That's what you feel. That's the jittery, the irritability, the sweaty spell, the I can eat everything in the room, hold on to your chair because I'm probably going to eat that. That is that feeling of hypoglycemia. And it is caused by this insulin resistance and this overproduction of insulin to try to overcome the insulin resistance of the cell. Okay. At some point, your cells become so insulin resistant that they don't ever bring that glucose all the way down, right? They have this unpredictable opening, this unpredictable responding to the blood or to the blood insulin level, right? Like to the insulin that's produced by the pancreas. But sometimes your pancreas can't get a high enough concentration of insulin enough to bring it down into the normal range. Or sometimes your cells aren't responding well enough. Okay. That's what allows your blood sugars to then ratchet up higher. Okay. That's what leads to the hyperglycemia, the high blood sugars, what we pick up as type 2 diabetes. But do understand this hypoglycemia is the same effect. Now, if you come to me and you're like, I have low blood sugars, they drop into the 40s. It happens a lot. And I only eat salmon and chicken and salads. And I never eat bread, never a crouton, never any crackers, never any oatmeal, never any pasta. I never have any processed carbs. And you're still having these low blood sugars. Yes, there is a very, very, very rare phenomenon called an insulinoma. It is very, very rare to have, and that will drive your blood sugars too low. But if you are coming to me and telling me I eat a bunch of carbs, If you're eating less than 50 grams of carbs a day and you're still driving your blood sugars low with that jittery feeling, that is something that we'd probably want to look into farther. But if you're eating processed foods, you're eating, you know, 300 grams of carbs a day, you're having a lot of artificial sweeteners, any of those things are going to impact your insulin production and leading then to insulin resistance and causing this rebound or this response of hypoglycemia. So I hope that was helpful. If you have any questions, let me know. So that leads us, of course, to sweeteners, right? Like, what about sweeteners? This is just a question I got just a few days ago. Can I do artificial sweeteners? So two things about artificial sweeteners that you need to think about before we talk about which artificial sweeteners are quote unquote okay. I don't know that I think any are quote unquote okay because of these two reasons. One, artificial sweeteners in some human beings will drive up your insulin response. It's a cephalopancreatic insulin response is what it's called. So you put something sweet in your mouth and that sweetness gets registered by your taste buds, goes to your brain. Your brain's like, ooh, that's sweet. And your brain says, and some human beings, their brains say, hey, that's sweet. The only time we've gotten sweetness in the past is when there's a huge carbohydrate load coming. We should prepare for carbohydrates, tell the pancreas to spit out some insulin, even if there are no carbohydrates associated with that sweet taste. Your body will produce insulin for some humans. I like to believe if you're a human that's overproduced insulin to the point that you are a type 2 diabetic, you're probably one of these humans, okay? This is a Pavlovian trained response. So it doesn't happen to all the humans. It happens to humans who have frequently put sweet things in their mouth that have been associated with a high carb load. This is the human. These are the humans that this happens to. Okay. So this is your sweeteners in your drinks. This is your sweeteners in your candies. This is your sweeteners in your protein powder drinks, those shakes, those smoothie powders. Okay. So one, it drives up insulin. And of course, the fix for type 2 diabetes is to let your insulin lower so your cells can heal up from their insulin resistance and you can normalize your blood sugars. Okay. So driving up insulin in any way, shape, or form is going to work against you for reversing your type 2 diabetes. The second thing that these sweeteners do is they typically drive the desire for more sweet stuff. So if you are sick and tired of your sweet cravings, cut these sweeteners out. This is what's driving those cravings for sweetness. Okay. So there are many, many different sweeteners. Most of them are not great sweeteners. They are not only these two things as far as driving up insulin and driving up your sweetness craving, they are also chemicals and they're science experiments, and they typically are very damaging to the body. There's no natural place that you're going to find aspartame or however you say it, right? Like, you're not going to find that in the natural world. It is a chemical that is designed by food manufacturers to create sweetness, create these cravings, and not give you calories because you believe calories are the problem. Okay. And they know this about the diet mentality and just the way that it has been taught in our society. In addition to this being a chemical, it's also really damaging to the gut microbiome. I did a podcast not long ago on the gut microbiome. You can check it out. But these sweeteners damage and kill off that gut microbiome and make your gut microbiome, they call it dysbiosis. They make your gut microbiome unhealthy. So avoiding them for those reasons is also important. If you find that your mind is like, but I really, really want the sweetness, recognize that's the addictive pathway of the sweetness. That's the addictive pathway of the sugars and the carbs that you've previously had. And that's why you're looking for it. Okay. You're looking to not do without the thing that's causing you to be sick. And that's the issue, right? Like, I'm just not willing to go without that thing. Yes, that's why we're sick with type 2 diabetes, is because we're not willing to go without it. Going without it is really the answer. Two sweeteners that tend to be better, quote unquote, they tend to drive less sweetness cravings. They tend to do less of this insulin response. They tend to be better on your gut microbiome. Monk fruit, if it's real monk fruit, there's a process of monk fruit and there's additives and alcohol and blah, 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 blah. Avoid that stuff. Do real, true monk fruit extract, 100% pure monk fruit extract. And then the other one is stevia. Again, stevia made in the box that you get at the grocery store may not be what we're talking about. Doing real 100% stevia, not the chemically added and altered stuff that's made by some of the large food manufacturers. So watch it and be careful. There's also inulin. It's very hard to find. I have found it. I had to order it from Europe, but I have a little jar of it. Inulin's an interesting thing it comes from. I've tried to do research on it. There's not a lot of literature out there about it. It comes from the chicory root, and it's basically the sap or the syrup of the chicory root. It is sweet. It is not horrible sweet. So it's not super sweet. The interesting thing about inulin is its carbohydrate to fiber ratio. So most of the time you're going to get like 1 gram of carb per X grams, multiple grams. I'm sorry, 1 gram of fiber per X grams, multiple grams of carbohydrate. So say you have 5 grams of carbohydrate, you're going to get 2, maybe 3 grams of fiber, of dietary fiber with that. So you have to invest a lot of carbohydrates into getting the daily recommended dose of fiber into your diet. Inulin is backwards. For 1 gram of carbohydrate in inulin, you get, I think, 6 grams of dietary fiber. I'm not sure what magic the chicory root has, but that's what's happening with it. So using it as a sweetener aggressively or robustly, one, it's not that sweet. Two, you're going to get a lot of fiber in your diet that could cause a lot of GI upset. So those are the three sweeteners. Again, inulin's hard to find. The other one is stevia, true pure stevia, and then true monk fruit, pure monk fruit. Those are probably ones that are better, but do understand if you are trying to twist the world to make it to where you can have sweetness in your life, that is an addictive situation. Okay. Not right or wrong, but your brain is working the system, trying to manipulate and find the loophole so that it doesn't have to let go of the thing that's making it sick. Okay. So just understand that that's what's happening. All right. So the next question I wanted to answer, how many carbs per day? Somebody emailed me and they asked how many carbs per day. And they said that their doctor had told them 40 with 3 meals a day and then 10 grams of carbs for 2 snacks a day. So I'm doing the math. I'm like, that's what, 140 grams of carbs in a day. I'm like, that sounds like an awful lot of carbs a day. It is still half of what the average American eats. The average American eats somewhere between 250 and 350 grams of carbs a day. It's no wonder we're all getting diabetic, right? So I recommend dropping. I don't know that dropping to 140 grams of carbs a day, and it's certainly, for the love of all that's holy, 3 meals and 2 snacks a day is too many exposures. It's too frequent of an exposure to insulin to help your cells heal up, okay? So I think that that recommendation, and it is from the ADA, the American Diabetes Association, it is from the nutritionists and the dietitians. I understand that that's where it's coming from. I don't think it's good recommendation. I think that that's too high. I think it's too frequent to eat to allow your cells to heal up. So I make the recommendation to drop to 50 grams of carbs per day and do that for about 6 weeks and see where your fasting is. Yes, some human beings have to drop it lower, not very many. Yes, some human beings don't have to drop it that low. Again, not very many. 50 grams of carbs per day tends to be a good place to keep your carb count for that first 6 to 12 weeks while your cells heal up. There is a podcast, and again, I'll link all these podcasts in the show notes. There is a podcast where I talk about how to test yourself to see if your insulin resistance is still there. And it's an at-home thing you can do. Easy peasy. I'll link that show or that podcast in the show notes. But do understand that if you drop it to 50 grams of carbs per day and you do that for 6 weeks and you notice your fasting blood sugar is now 90 every day, you know, it's been that way most days for the last 2 weeks, and your after meal blood sugars are all normal and life is going great, then at that 6 week mark, you can test yourself to see if you are still insulin resistant. So, and then from that place, from that testing, and yes, my insulin resistance seems to have been resolved, in that place, you can start ratcheting up to maybe 75 grams of carbs a day, maybe 100 grams of carbs per day. There will never be a place where 300 or 350 grams of carbs in the human being's diet every day is going to create a situation where you're not diabetic. I just don't see that being a reality. If it happens for you, fine. I don't see that being the typical biology of the typical human being. Okay. So, and even if you don't end up diabetic, remember you can be insulin resistant, and that insulin resistance shows up as polycystic ovarian syndrome. It shows up as low T. It shows up as heart disease. It shows up as non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. It shows up in dementia. All these different diseases are linked back to this insulin resistance. So even if you're not diabetic, it does not mean you're healthy because you're eating 350 grams of carbs a day. That is not aligned with our biology. Okay. So, that's how I recommend doing it. If at that 6 weeks you do that carb challenge test and you feel like your blood sugar afterwards jumped up to 250 and stayed that way for a long time. I mean, even if it jumps to 250 or honestly, anything above 180 is probably too high. And you probably need to continue and persist for another 4 to 6 weeks on that carbohydrate count of 50 grams or less a day. Okay. So I hope that answers that question. If not, let me know. And lastly, what about calorie counting? What about counting calories? You all know that I recommend that you count your carbohydrates just so you have an understanding of how many carbs you can eat before your blood sugars go up. That's really important. But a lot of times people have the belief that we need to count calories, and there's nothing wrong with counting calories. I used to say this was worthless, and my position on this, along with the sweeteners, by the way, has kind of shifted a little bit over the years. If you are counting calories because it's a nice way for you to have volume control on how much food you're eating, I think that's fine. Okay. How many calories you need, that's where things can get sketchy and questionable. The question I had was, you know, somebody had told me to eat 2000 grams or 2000 calories a day, but I know when I do that, that my carbohydrates are too high and my blood sugars go up. So if that's what you're finding, don't eat 2000 calories a day, drop it by 250, drop it to 1500, however you want to do it. I think it's very important to watch your hunger cueing more than you watch your calorie counts. Okay. If your body is satisfied, then you've had enough energy. You don't need to keep consuming. Okay. I know that I have had to do this lately. I've started adding more protein, and I wanted to add protein. I wanted to add muscle to my body, to my physique. So I started having to add that macronutrient evaluation into my diet every day. And I don't count carbs anymore because my numbers are reversed. In fact, labs are coming in. Hopefully this week I get my results. I had them done last Friday. My labs have been normal for the past many years. My insulin level is non-detectable. My A1C has been less than 5. My triglycerides are low. All the numbers that I look at, the biomarkers to look at insulin resistance and generalized health, have all looked good for the past number of years. So I don't count my carbs, and I haven't for probably the last 2 years. I just don't count them. It's math that I don't need to look at because I know the foods that I can eat and keep my blood sugars normal because I've done this for years. Okay. So I don't need to continue to count the calories the carbohydrates on the meal that I've eaten all this time. Right. So if that's where you're at, that's fine. I wanted to add protein. So suddenly I was eating differently. So I did go back to tracking some of this information. So I started tracking how many grams of protein I was eating in a day. In addition to that, because then I'm eating more, like I've just been eating more, in order to keep my weight in the range that I wanted, then I've started to count calories. I keep my calories in a certain range. It's not one specific number that has to be perfect every day of my life. I just keep it in a range, and that helps me keep my volume down, the volume of food that I'm eating limited. Now, understand, it's like a Rubik's Cube. It's a puzzle I have to solve every day. You know, how many calories do I consume that also gets me the protein volume that I need and the fiber that I want in my diet? So there's a number of different moving parts that I have to watch. And I find that counting calories is a great way for me to keep those in check. So if you're going to count calories because of that, that's awesome. Okay. Run with that. Do it. But please do follow your hunger cueing, your hunger signaling. So if your body is telling you 2000 calories, and if your blood sugar goes up with 2000 calories a day, clearly that's too many. Okay. But if you find that you're like, oh, I'm supposed to eat 2000 calories a day because that's what I was told to eat, but I find that it's too much and now I can't lose weight. You can't lose weight because you're overeating what your body needs. Okay. I don't care if you're overeating with carrots. If you're eating too much, you are not going to lose weight. Okay. And sometimes counting calories will allow you to help give you some targets to not eating too much, but do not eat to a certain calorie amount just because you believe you had to eat so many calories. I don't think that's going to be helpful or get you the results that you want. Okay. I hope that all of this has been helpful information. Check out the show notes. I'll have some podcast episodes linked there. If you have any questions, send me a message to Delaine@DelaineMD.com. I'm happy to answer anything. If you are ready to invest in yourself and get started living the natural life, learning how to do this, learning how to reverse your diabetes in the form that looks like joining my group, let me know. Set up a consult with me. Send me a message to Delaine@DelaineMD.com. We'll set up a time. We can meet. You'll hear about the group, how it can help, and we can get you started when you're ready for that. All right. I will talk with you next week. Bye-bye.